And I'm going to take this jacket off, too. I don't want to start sweating.
And it will happen. I think last week was a great service. And it was great to be here and be a part of not only witnessing our brother Frank being baptized and being added to the church, but also Marcos did a great job. You know, his lesson was very appropriate and on time, and talking about loving our neighbors and frankly even loving ourselves. And so I was grateful for that. Today I want to get back to our series talking about the church and getting back to the church and what that actually means. This idea of the church, and again, we think of the church, and a lot of times we have to remind ourselves that the church is not just the organization, it's not just, you know, this building, but that it's the people, that we make up the church. That if you're online watching right now, you're still a part of the church, even though you're not physically meeting in this building with us. And getting back to the church, there are certain things that we have to do that might be a little bit different than before. And I say before in reference to COVID-19, because COVID-19 has frankly revealed a lot of things that otherwise may not have come to the surface. What I want to focus on today, though, primarily is one thing. And that is, what actually makes us like Jesus? Now, as we transform our hearts, as we crucify sin, as we take our sin to the cross, as we have received grace and forgiveness, we progressively mature and become more and more like Christ. But I'm talking about no matter where you are, even if you're not somebody who has chosen to follow Jesus, what actually makes us like Jesus? What actually makes us like Jesus? What makes us akin and where we can relate is that Jesus had humanity. Jesus was a person. Jesus dealt with feelings and emotions and hurts. You know, what's the shortest verse in the Bible? Jesus wept. Jesus had sadness and sorrow. He could relate to our sufferings and our cares and our concerns. And so in that way, whenever we read about Jesus, whenever we reflect and think about what it means to be more like him, we can look at his example, but then we can look at his example and we can realize that, you know what? I can do that too. I can, in fact, be like him. Being like Christ is not some far-off thing that we can't achieve. We can imitate him and be like him and live the ways that he did. Now, I say all this to set it up because when we think about the church and what we as a church need to do to be more like what God intended the church to be, we have to sometimes take some personal inventory and ask ourselves, well, in what way am I not being like Jesus? Because clearly he was human. Because clearly he went through things. He gave us the perfect roadmap and example. But what's one of the ways in which I'm not actually being like Christ? And one of the ways that I want to focus on today is being willing to confront those things that may cause us a little bit of heartburn, that may cause us a little bit of anxiety, or dare I say some fear. The willingness to confront those things that are challenging. Because our human nature, we instinctively go to the, what, you know, water goes the path of least resistance. We generally like to be comfortable, right? You know, I came in here about an hour before everybody else showed up, and I made sure to turn the heat up. Why? Because I didn't want Miss Juanita getting up walking out because it was too cold in here. She wouldn't have walked out. She just would have frowned at me, and she would have wore a coat the whole time, right? Because we want to be comfortable when we're here. When we go home, you know, when we decorate things and we clean up, I spent all day yesterday cleaning up the house. Why? Because my wife, she was, you know, she had to do some work and I knew she was going to be tired when she got home. And I said, you know, it'd be really nice if my wife comes home to a really clean house. I like literally hand wiped the floors in the kitchen. Like I did. Yeah, she's clapping. So, yes, I really did. The thing is, it wasn't just I wanted her to be happy, but I wanted her to be comfortable. As humans, we want to be comfortable. And sometimes the biggest challenge to us being the church that God wants us to be is that we have to resist the urge to put our comfort over being Christ-like. I've given a title today, and we're going to do this in two parts, part of it today, part of it next week, God willing. Do it afraid. Do it afraid. Because sometimes we sit around and we want to come up with all the possible scenarios and we want to deal with every possible outcome and we want to, you know, schedule things perfectly and we want everything to work out right and we want to make sure we build up the courage and we want to build up the heart and we want to make sure that we know everything. And it's like, no, sometimes there is no perfect time. Sometimes you're going to be afraid. But it can't stop you from being like Christ. There's a book, actually, there's a lady, Joyce Myers wrote a book, it was called Do It Afraid, and when she talked about overcoming our fear and being more like Christ. Now, I've never read the book, I'm familiar with it, I've heard some things on it, but this idea of doing things afraid, sometimes, and like I said, we're going to do this in two parts, because I want to dig into different examples, but I want to start with the example of Christ and how Christ was willing to do things afraid. In her book, one of the things that Joyce Meyer said was, just because you feel fear doesn't mean you can't do it. Do it afraid. Sometimes we stop ourselves as a church. We look at things. We realize the task that's ahead of us. We know how many people are lost around us. We know how many people don't really have an understanding of what it means to follow Jesus. But if we're really honest about it, it's not that we need, you know, better chairs and a bigger building or we need, you know, more things. Sometimes we just have to be honest with ourselves at a heart level and admit we're afraid to do what it takes. I want to start with an example of Christ in Luke chapter 4. In verse 24 it says, truly I tell you, he continued, no prophet is accepted in his hometown. I assure you that there were many widows in Israel in Elijah's time, when the sky was shut off for 3.5 years and there was a severe famine throughout the land. Yet Elijah was not sent to any of them, but to a widow in Zarephath, in the region of Sidon. And there were many in Israel with leprosy in the time of Elisha the prophet. Yet none of them was cleansed, only Naaman the Syrian. All the people in the synagogue were furious when they heard this. They got up, drove him out of the town, and took him to the brow of the hill on which the town was built, in order to throw him off the cliff. But he walked right through the crowd and went on his way. Now I want to pause there. It's interesting to note that right after this, if you were to continue reading through verse 31 and 32, you would see that after he goes through this crowd, he goes on about his business, he proceeds to heal this person who was demon possessed. I mean, he would go on to do many things after this, but right after this, you see it chronicled where he heals someone who's demon-possessed. And we can almost go past this and see how he walks through this crowd that's about to kill him and throw him off the cliff because they're so angry with him. We can jump to the miracle of him healing this demon-possessed, driving out this demon from this demon-possessed person. And we can forget to ask ourselves, what if Jesus, who was human just like us, who was afraid and experienced emotions like fear just like us, what if he didn't do what he did right here? What if the story stops there? See, we never consider this about Jesus because Jesus, you know, he's a hero. You know, he's great. He's perfect. He's wonderful. He's all these things. And yet we forget that this same attitude that we see here with Jesus is expected of us. They got up, drove him out of the town, and took him to the brow of the hill on which the town was built in order to throw him off a cliff. They wanted to kill him. They wanted him dead. He was causing a problem. He was making them uncomfortable. He was exposing them for being weak, for being corrupt, for in some ways even being opposed to and against what it was that God wanted. They were upset to the point that they were willing to have him killed. And you can just imagine it where he just sees this. And I think about this, and I've shared this with you before. There are plenty of times, I mean, I've literally spoken in front of crowds of people thousands of times. There's not one time that I get up in front of a crowd of people and there isn't at least some change in your heart rate, right? There's at least some anxiety that sets in. I don't care how many times you did it. Now, I don't experience this at home. I don't know that I would call my children a crowd. But sometimes even with my children or my wife, there's that conversation that I have to have. And I know what the outcome's going to be. Sharice and Kendall and William, they're going to come out of the kitchen with forks and knives. And they're going to be ready to drive me. We don't have a cliff over the house, but they're ready to drive me down the basement stairs or something, right? Sometimes those conversations, I know what's coming. There's anxiety. There's tension. There's some sweat. There's some fear. But you have to be willing to do things afraid. Because, let's face it, we don't know what's going to come on the other side of those interactions, those conversations. You know, you think, well, man, I'm afraid. What happens if I do this, if I take this stance? Or if I call this thing out that I know is wrong, what happens if I lose my job? What happens if I lose my house? What happens if this person doesn't love me anymore? They won't speak to me anymore. What happens if they talk about me and they spread negative things about me and my reputation is hindered? What happens if this person who maybe is unstable? What happens if they threaten my life? When it comes to doing what is right, when it comes to speaking the truth, when it comes to seeking and saving the lost, are we truly vested in it in such a way that we're willing to do it, even though we may be afraid in that moment? When you have a mandate from God, nothing can scare you, distract you, or stop you. Nothing should be able to stand in our way. Jesus understood that he was on a mission, that he had a purpose, that there was something that he was expected to do. And being afraid in the moment as these people are driving him away from the town and ready to kill him wasn't enough to stop him. Is that something that's reflected in our walk with God? Jesus wasn't out here purposefully and intentionally trying to start problems and pick fights with people. It wasn't about being a rabble rouser or being someone who was controversial. It wasn't that he set out to be this controversial figure, but the fact is, there was something greater, there was something more important. People needed to see God. And so it didn't matter what the response was going to be. It didn't matter if they were going to try to kill him. He knew in this moment, hey, you know, you may get me later, but right now I know there's more to do. Not only do I know there's more to do and more than God wants of me, but I know that God is with me right now. So I'm going to walk right through you. Not run away, not run and hide. I'm going to walk right through you, undeterred. Well, they say, feel the fear and do it anyway. Because we forget Jesus was truly afraid. And we're going to look at that here in just a second. You know, when I think of this time of year, it's fall, Wizard of Oz, and so naturally lions and tigers and bears, right? I'm waiting for it. My mom's going to call me, hey, the Wizard of Oz is on, right? And she's going to talk to the kids, and they're going to have this same conversation every spring, every fall. We're going to talk about lions and tigers and bears because it's the Wizard of Oz, right? Now, the thing about it, the reason why I bring this up, there was a guy who, he quoted something. I'm going to dig into this a little bit more next week when we talk a little bit about David. But he says, and I want to get this right, he says, a lot of times we cannot face our Goliaths because we're too busy running from bears and lions. He's making a reference to David because we look at David and we look at his heroism, we look at his bravery, his willingness to stand up to Goliath, this giant. We look at it in contrast to Saul and his men and how they were not willing to stand up to this giant. But what's so important about it is to stand up to a giant, it starts with David being out there alone, the shepherd boy being willing to stand up to a bear, to a lion, to a wolf. You know, I bring this up because when we think about the things that we have to confront, the things that we have to overcome in our walk with God, sometimes we look at the big things, those big challenges, those big fears, if you will, and you wonder, well, why is it that this person is so courageous? They have so much faith. They're willing to stand up. That nothing shakes them. Nothing seems to break them. Death, sickness, injury, loss of money, loss of job, people hurt them, people say things. Why is it that they are so unfazed by any of these things? It's because they were willing to stand up to the smaller things. It's because they were willing to confront those smaller issues. See, it's not just the giants in our lives. Oftentimes, God is sending things along our path, though, when we're that little shepherd and we're all alone, and he's saying, no, I want you to stand up to this wolf. I want you to stand up this thing, because, you know, we can look at big picture things, and, you know, we're in election season, everybody's talking about politics and things like that, and we can look at things in the big macro view. Well, I wish this politician would be more courageous. I wish they would stand for something. I wish people would do this. And we have all these opinions and thoughts, but then we look at our own lives when we look at our own families, when we look at our own sinful nature. Are we willing to stand up to those small things or smaller things that face us every single day? Because long before you can confront a giant who is defying God's army and mocking them, you have to be willing to stand up to those daily threats along the way. I want to finish by looking here in Matthew 26, starting in verse 36. It says, then Jesus went to his disciples to a place called Gethsemane, and he said to them, sit here while I go over there and pray. He took Peter and the two sons of Zebedee along with him, and he began to be sorrowful and troubled. Then he said to them, my soul is overwhelmed with sorrow to the point of death. Stay here and keep watch with me. Going a little farther, he fell with his face to the ground and prayed, my Father, if it is possible, may this cup be taken from me. Yet not as I will, but as you will. Then he returned to his disciples and found them sleeping. Couldn't you men keep watch with me for 1 hour? He asked Peter. Watch and pray so that you do not fall into temptation. The spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak. He went away a second time and prayed, my Father, if it is not possible for this cup to be taken away unless I drink it, may your will be done. When he came back, he again found them sleeping because their eyes were heavy. So he left them and went away once more and prayed the third time, saying the same thing. Then he returned to the disciples and said to them, are you still sleeping and resting? Look, the hour has come, and the Son of Man is delivered into the hands of sinners. Rise, let us go. Here comes my betrayer. We see here something very powerful about Jesus that we can all learn from. Unlike the previous example where his life is being threatened and they're wanting to throw him off the brow of this hill in this town, here he is only trying to do something good. He knows what's about to happen. He knows that not only is he about to be taken to be crucified shortly, but he knows that one of his 12, one of the disciples, one of the people who he has poured his life into, not only is he about to be killed, but he is about to be betrayed by somebody that he loves. And yet, with all of that, with all of that fear, with all of that crying, with all the anxiety, with the betrayal, with the hurt, with the sadness, he says, rise, let us go. Sometimes we have to be willing to do those things which we are afraid of, surrounded by people but still alone, surrounded by people but nobody really understands what you're going through. See, Jesus can identify with all of that, yet he was still willing to go through with it. What prevents the church from being able to have the impact that it needs to have? What prevents us from being able to seek and save the lost, even though there's tons of people seeking, is our fear that stops us from doing it, even when the outcome, in some cases, we know it's going to hurt us. It's going to cause us a problem. It's going to cause us to have to make sacrifices. It's going to cause us to have some very negative things take place in our life. What we see here is that Jesus sets an example in his humanity in that he's crying, he's praying, he's asking God, if there's another way, I want it to be different. I don't want to have to go through this. But once again, just like the last time, he knew God was with him. And he knew what the outcome was going to be, and he stepped into it anyway. Are we willing to do that in our walk with God? For the church to grow, we must often do the work before being brave and sometimes do it alone. You know, I say before being brave because sometimes, let's face it, we don't get brave and then do it. Sometimes we just don't have time. Sometimes we just don't have the type of time we need to be able to muster up all the courage. But we know what we need to do. And I don't just mean adrenaline kicks in and we just leap into action. I'm saying, you know, sometimes, you know, let's face it, you know, Curtis, I appreciate when he was reading through that talking about the change in the seasons. It's Thanksgiving coming up, holidays coming up. What do you know that you're going to get during the holidays? For most of us, we're going to get some family. We're going to get some cousins, going to get some aunties, going to get some mom and dad and sons and daughters, and we're going to have more time to talk to people and spend time with people. Some of those people you know are lost. Some of those people that you're going to have an opportunity to sit down and talk about, oh man, this, by the way, side note, this blew my mind. For whatever reason, they decided to cancel the Great Pumpkin. Charlie Brown, they decided not to air it this year. We were devastated. I don't know what to do. Anyway, the point is, that's a conversation piece that comes up, and we can get distracted. We can talk about college football. We can talk about all these things, the holidays, positive. We can talk about all these things, but when it comes to talking about God, if we're really, truly honest about it, sometimes we're just afraid. We're afraid to bring it up. We're afraid to tell our family, people that we love, that we would even be willing to die for. We're afraid to tell them somebody already died for you. We're afraid to tell them you need to accept Christ. You need to live a life pleasing to God. Because we don't want the outcome. And we agonize and we twist and we sweat and we're like, well, how do I do it? And you know, we call people and we get advice and how should I say it? Sometimes we just sit there frozen. Paralysis. And we sit there and the Cowboys are playing for Thanksgiving and then the Lions are playing and it starts with 3 sweet potato pies. And now you're down to 1 sweet potato pie left. The evening's gone and you're still there and you still didn't say anything. You've made a run to the store because you forgot the ice cream or the Cool Whip. And you've sat down and you talked about the new baby. You've talked about everything. But you didn't bring up the fact that this person does not have a relationship with God. Their election is not sure. I appreciate the study that's been going on in Sunday school talking about heaven. And you know people that because of where they stand, they won't make it there. But you're too afraid to tell them. You're too afraid to confront this. And when we look at Christ in his humanity, he was afraid. But he did it anyway. Are you willing to model that example of Christ in how you live and how you treat other people? What is it going to take? What is going to have to happen? What has to go on to prompt you to say, you know what? I may never feel totally comfortable about this. I may never get over the fear. I may never have the courage, but I got to talk to my son. But I got to talk to my coworker. We've been working together for 12 years and we've been sitting next to each other. Our families have gone on vacations. What is it going to take for you to say, you know what? I'm just going to do it. I'm going to confront this thing and I'm going to do it afraid. For the church to grow, it's not bells and whistles and amenities and extra stuff that we need to do. We just need to get over our fear and open our mouths. Maybe it's not even somebody who doesn't know Christ. Maybe it's our own brother and sister. Somebody who they share the same faith with you, but maybe they are not living right. Maybe they're just not in a place where they need to be. Are you willing to pull them aside? Are you willing to call them and say, hey, let's talk? We meet in the parking lot. We don't even have to be that close. Keep your mask on. We'll talk car to car or something. But I'm willing to do it, even if it means I'm going to lose this friendship. I'm putting it all my chips are on the table. I'm putting them all in because this matters so much. When we read this passage here in Matthew 26, what we see is Jesus prayed 3 times. He's agonizing. He's sweating blood. He's crying out. And then he decided that the salvation of each and every one of us matters more than my own life. Are we willing to participate and share in this part of Christ? Because for everybody who wants to drive out a demon or turn water into wine or do some other miracle, this is the miracle that we all share in. This is the miracle that we could all participate in being like Christ and being willing to sacrifice what we have of our life so that others can be saved. I'm going to close with a few thoughts here, some questions. This quote, sometimes the fear won't go away, so you have to do it afraid. Sometimes the fear won't go away. Sometimes that pain doesn't go away. Sometimes it's not just, oh, you know, you're afraid of nothing and it's all going to be okay. No, sometimes, guess what? It's not going to be okay. We see that with Christ. No, he actually was, in fact, going to be betrayed, he was going to be taken, and he was going to hang on a cross, and he was going to be tortured. It did not turn out okay in that moment. There was pain. But he did it anyway, understanding the ultimate prize and the ultimate outcome. What are we willing to give up and sacrifice? What fear is it that we are willing to say, I'm going to face it, even though I know it may not work out best for me in this moment, in the here and now, because I know what the ultimate prize is and that it matters more. A few questions here. First one, what one small thing do I need to confront to be for me to be a better Christian and do what God has commissioned me to do? I say small thing there because, again, sometimes we look at the great big giants that we have to confront. All these enormous, daunting tasks that are in front of us, but it's really the small things. It's those small things in our lives that we know what that one or two things are where it's like, man, I really just have to confront this. I've got to deal with this. I got to call this person out. I got to cut that off. I got to say no. I've got to change this thing. What's a small thing that you can confront, that you can make a decision, you can confront that today? What is the small thing that we have to do to build to the place where our faith can be such that we can take on those giants in our lives, be examples to others? What is the small thing that we could pick up the phone, or we could write that letter, we could get online and send an email? What's the one small thing that you could do today? What's that one thing that causes you heartburn and anxiety that you could confront today that would change not only your life but someone else's because you're doing the work of the Lord? Am I waiting on my courage to build before tackling issues when I should be trusting God to be there as I push forward? I ask it this way, going back to Jesus, because as he's standing there at the brow of this cliff, this hill, and he's being getting ready to be pushed over, the way that you walk through that crowd, that angry mob, the way that you face the adversity isn't to wait on the courage to build. You do it because you know you're walking with God, because you know that he hasn't left you, because you know he hasn't abandoned you. So you can walk confidently and clearly through whatever it is. That matter if people mock you or laugh at you or criticize you or threaten you or they're going to take something from you, because you know God's with you. Are you waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting instead of saying, you know what? I know God's with me. I'm going to push through and I'm going to do this. And I'm going to do it right now. Am I willing to stand alone in my own convictions? And this is very important, because sometimes standing alone on your conviction can actually be the scariest thing. Even when you think about the church, you know, Jesus is in the garden by himself, even though he's surrounded with other disciples. Not because they didn't care, they didn't love, they didn't really appreciate the magnitude of what's going on. They didn't really feel the gravity of the situation. They still didn't understand, even as he's hanging there on the cross. They didn't get it. There are going to be times in our walk with God where people around us, people who are well-meaning, they just don't get the situation. Are you willing to stand alone on your convictions and do it anyway? When I consider the steps that God wants me to take, do I consider the immediate results or the ultimate impact as well? Jesus does not get up from praying resolved that he's going to meet his betrayer and face his death if he doesn't see the ultimate impact and the ultimate prize in all of it, because he knew that the torture was coming. He knew that the betrayal was coming. He knew that Peter was going to deny him three times. He knew what he was about to face, but he saw the big picture. As we confront situations in our own lives, big or small, do we see the ultimate impact, the big picture? Are we willing to take those steps understanding that the immediate results, the immediate pain, the immediate discomfort, the immediate rejection does not outweigh ultimately what God wants me to do for his kingdom and to do his will. And finally, whose life will be changed forever because I chose to walk in my purpose at least once while I was afraid? See, I say at least once because going back to the thing, and like I said, we'll talk about this next week with David, but you got to imagine David, while his brothers are off fighting and in war, and while his dad is off and while they're all gone, he's back there tending these sheep. Sometimes we can look at the, you know, King David, and we can see how great he was after we read about him. We can kind of forget that there was a point where David is tending these sheep. Can you imagine the first time he saw the bear? Can you imagine the first time a lion shows up as he's tending this flock? In his mind, you got to be thinking, I don't know if it's worth it, right? I know my dad will be mad at me, but he doesn't think much of me anyway. I don't know if I'm willing to do this. Can you imagine the first time? Somebody's life can be changed because one time you were willing to be brave. Because one time you were willing to speak up. See, one time turns into two, turns into three, turns into slaying a giant. I saw a picture of in 1994, Jeff Bezos starts Amazon.com. He has this picture painted. He actually had to paint, I think it was paint or magic marker or something, Amazon.com. He's in his little itty bitty office, right? And the meme, as circulated on the internet, I shared it with my wife. It says, don't compare your stage one to someone else's stage 20. See, a lot of times we can look at Jeff Bezos now and we can look at Amazon and it's like, oh my. Like, how did these boxes even show up? I thought about ordering this, made the decision to do it, and it was there like that afternoon. Like, we sometimes feel like Amazon is magic. It's amazing how wealthy he is. But it started in a little bitty office with him just on the phone, figuring out how he's going to sell a few books. Your courage and your willingness to do things afraid starts one place. But where it takes you, where it ends up, the amount of impact you can have. See, this isn't just rah-rah and encouragement and go do it. No, this is real. There are real people who are impacted by you being willing to say, I know this is scary, but I also know the price. And I understand what's at stake. We have to be willing to be bold and courageous because just like Christ in his humanity was afraid, we're going to be afraid. There's going to be uncertainty. We have to be willing to overcome that uncertainty and do God's will anyway.